to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.
This program reflects the views and opinions of the participants. Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded February 28th, 2024. Well, yes, by the dickens, while it's the best of times for war profiteers on Wall Street and their puffed-up pitchmen in the Pentagon, few champagne corks were popping in Kyiv to commemorate the 10th anniversary of the coup that toppled President Viktor Yanukovych and led to the quagmire of death and destruction engulfing first Ukraine, then Russia. And if celebrations were tastefully demure in Washington, in Ottawa, home of many in high places playing a role in fomenting the stock boom and distant disaster, observances were absolutely muted. In fact, not a word was uttered of the coup with a Canadian connection on the TV or in the press. And truth be told, there's an embarrassment of riches this week for Canadian coupsters, with not one but two milestones marking the nation's international perfidy. Likewise, though, Canadians won't likely hear about Canada's inglorious role in the overthrow of Haiti's duly elected. Down there, they're marking the 20th year of political regression tomorrow, with more poverty and chaos in the streets. Eve Engler is a Montreal-based political activist and the author of 13 books, most detailing the dark dealings of Canada's foreign policy elite, including Canada in Haiti, Waging War on the Poor Majority, co-authored with Anthony Fenton. Eve's latest co-authored with Owen Schalk is Canada's Long Fight Against Democracy. He's also a prolific essayist whose writing appears across the internet and at his website, eveengler.com. Eve Engler in the first half. And the deleterious effects of Canada's pernicious foreign policies are not limited to just creating conflict, death, and retarding the social development of poorer nations. With its egregious and illegal actions regarding the current genocide in Gaza, this country has shown the world it's ready to join history's first tier of global infamy. Anas al-Salah is a third-generation refugee descended from Haifa-occupied Palestine, currently residing here on the Saanich Peninsula, Coast Salish territory. Anas has been a featured speaker at the Gaza Solidarity March and Rally in Victoria, carrying on now into its fifth month. Anas al-Salah and struggling for peace in Gaza from Canada in the second half. But first, Eve Engler on remembering the death of Haitian democracy and them that killed it 20 years ago tomorrow. Welcome back to the program, Eve.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's always my pleasure, of course. Now, Eve, last week, Melanie Joly, the Canadian foreign minister, while she was at the G20 in Rio, announced a huge new tranche of money devoted to the intervention in Haiti. The reaction there hasn't been entirely positive. What's it about?
Yeah, the Canadian government put up $80 million on top of a previously announced $40 million for a foreign mission to Haiti. And that's they've been trying to get countries in the Western Hemisphere to lead that mission. At one point, the Americans wanted Canada to lead that mission, and the Canadian military didn't want to do that. And they've gotten the Kenyans to agree to lead the mission, even though the actual Kenyan court has said the president doesn't have the right to send Kenyan troops to Haiti. So there's a legal battle going on in Kenya, but the Canadian government has put up money alongside about $200 million from the U.S. To sponsor, to pay for this mission. And of course, we know that this is a mission. They frame it as fighting insecurity in Haiti. But as much as it is about fighting insecurity, it's about protecting the leader that they installed, Ariel Henry, who they installed almost 3 years ago now. And I say they, I mean the core group, which is led by the U.S. and Canada, the core group of foreign ambassadors. And Ariel Henry, just 2 weeks ago, he passed his self-imposed date where he would leave office. He has no constitutional legitimacy. He has no popular legitimacy either. What he has is the backing of Washington principally and Ottawa secondarily. And now they are, Canadian taxpayers are funding this foreign force to maintain order in favor of this unelected, unconstitutional leader. And there was a protest on Sunday in front of hundreds, according to the video I saw online, hundreds marched on the Canadian embassy in Port-au-Prince. And some people put burnt tires and obviously they chanted slogans. One video clip I saw from the protest said that cited the U.S., Canada, and France as the countries that are strangling Haiti's development. And, you know, this doesn't get much attention in Canada's media, but that is true. And, you know, this announcing this funding for a foreign intervention in Haiti comes on the week of the 20th anniversary right. of this incredible, shameful act in Canadian foreign policy history of overthrowing Haiti's thousands of Haiti's elected officials back in February 29th, 2004.
Yeah, and when you say that Henry had promised to leave on the 7th of February, that's not just any day of the week either, as well as the 29th, tomorrow's date, being so significant as the 20th anniversary of the ouster of Aristide that we'll talk about in a minute. But February 7th is an especially poignant date in Haiti as well, right?
Yeah, it's the end of the Duvalier dictatorship in 1986. And it has been the day of transfer of power between elected officials ever since that time.
And ironically enough, Aristide was sworn in on that date in his first term back in 91.
Yes, yeah, and then he was of course overthrown by the U.S. created military 8 months later.
Well, now Canada, about this this mission that, and I'll play a bit of that demo that you put up on Twitter. I'll record that later in the show. But this is being carried out. The UN mission there was pretty controversial and deemed a huge failure. This new mission is the Multinational Security Support Mission. This is the one that Canada is doling out. It reports $123 million, which is some of it is previously promised money, if I understand correctly. Who is this mission? Are they the Multinational Security Support Mission? Are they overseen as well by the United Nations?
Yeah, it's not. It was okay. The Security Council passed a resolution okaying this mission, but it's not actually a UN mission, and that's part of the funding question. That's part of why the U.S. and Canada are putting up this money on the side, because it's not actually being funded via the UN. So it's got this weird kind of status of sort of okayed by the Security Council, but not a formal UN mission, and that goes to the fact that, of course, there was this UN mission and actually continues to be a UN office in Haiti. But there was a formal UN military force in Haiti between 2004 and 2017. And then it was kind of whittled down after 2017 over the next few years. But there was, 10,000 UN troops and UN police occupying Haiti from 2004 till 2017. And that mission, which comes out of the 2004 coup, is kind of left in disgrace. Not only the sort of root political issue of it being a force to occupy the country after this coup, but in fact, it brought cholera to Haiti, right? So that tens of thousands of people were killed because UN troops were just dumping their feces river that people were drinking from, and that's what introduced cholera from Nepalese troops happened to have cholera, and that brought it into to Haitian it hadn't been in Haiti for a long time. So the UN mission kind of left in disgrace, and the over the past year or so the Canadian government has been with the US has been seeking out countries in the hemisphere that actually played a big role in the previous UN mission, countries like Brazil, Uruguay, Caribbean countries, and they haven't been able to succeed. Brazil led the military mission for many years, but they haven't been able to get countries like Brazil to participate in this new occupation force. But the Canadian government, we should point out, is working hard at that. There's a story about how Canadian Canadian troops are training troops from the Bahamas right now for this UN mission. Canadian troops are, you know, working with, I think Jamaica is going to send troops, police or troops, and some other countries in the Caribbean. They've been able to sort of coerce into participating, and of course the funding is a, you know, central factor in promoting the foreign intervention.
Well, is that the imprimatur of the United Nations? Is that a necessary condition? I mean, can this be looked at as being just a bribe from Canada to the UN to get their okay to get involved in Haiti's internal governance? There's like 37 million or something I'm looking at devoted to UN projects announced by Jolie.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. I mean, this is a U.S. Canadian affair, and the U.N. Security Council, the Chinese and the Russians, who have the veto possibility, they raised a lot of objections to a U.N. mission. And I think what happened in the background was that the Russians and the Chinese agreed to the resolution that this is sort of got this sort of bizarre status of being okayed by the Security Council, but not a formal UN mission, so it won't be drawing out of the regular funding structures for UN missions, and so it's left to Washington and Ottawa to. I think the French put up a little bit of money as well, but it's left to principally Washington and Ottawa to pay for this, and also alongside that, pay for some UN training elements that are part of this.
Well, in the Global Affairs Canada press release, it seems that the government is crowing, saying, I'll quote them, for nearly 30 years, Canada has contributed to every UN peace mission to Haiti to support stabilization and reconstruction efforts. And then they go on to say that this includes members of the armed forces and the RCMP, as well as correctional officers. But they don't seem to see the irony in the disasters that you just outlined. And that was just one of the many disasters that the UN intervention forces in Haiti were the authors of, the cholera epidemic, but also killings of innumerable people in the Cite Soleil and other of the poorer neighborhoods.
Yeah, I mean they don't recognize that Canada, when they talk about Canada, they frame it as Canada helping Haiti, but in fact we know that Canada has been undermining Haitian sovereignty aggressively for multiple decades, and Canada's participation in these UN missions, they've had, I would say, varying degrees of illegitimacy. This current mission is maybe less illegitimate, less obviously imperialistic than the 2004 Canadian military intervention into Haiti, which we have to recognize that, you know, Canadian troops help kidnap the elected president. I mean, U.S. Marines put him on a flight and dumped him in the Central African Republic, and Canadian troops were securing the Toussaint Louverture airport where that all transpired. And then Canadian troops, 500 Canadian troops, were on the ground in Haiti for the next 6 months, and it became part of the MINUSTAH, of the UN mission, and then Canada led the policing component of the UN mission. That mission was absolutely a tool of ensuring that democracy wasn't reestablished in Haiti. We overthrew the democracy, and then we occupied the place to ensure that the pro-democracy movement wasn't able to return democracy to the country. The current mission, the Canadian government, I think, legitimately could say that they've messed stuff up so badly in Haiti that the sort of democratic situation is just there is no easy out to the current situation, right? In 2004, there were 7,000 elected officials that had won the most legitimate elections in Haitian history, and we destroyed that. We overthrew that. Today, there's basically no elected officials. There are no elected officials. There's no one who has legitimacy, constitutionally speaking, and even for that matter, popularly speaking, the most popular party in Haitian history, we destroyed. That was the whole point of the 2004 coup, was to destroy Famille Lavalas, which had organized itself into this incredible political force that was far and away the most popular political party, but it wasn't following what the rich people in the country wanted, and it wasn't following what the foreign powers wanted, and so we had to destroy that valiant effort of building a political structure that was in the service of the overwhelming majority of impoverished Haitians. So today's mission, Canada funding, Kenya to lead a mission, it's a bit more murky in terms of is there a good alternative? There isn't, immediately speaking, a good alternative. But what what's clear that's not going to be a positive development is that if we reinforce this dynamic of foreign powers controlling Haiti, that's just more of the problem that we've been stoking here for at least two decades or more.
Yeah. Well, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Eve Angler. Eve is a Montreal-based political activist and the author of 13 books, mostly detailing the dark dealings of Canada's foreign policy elite, including Canada and Haiti, Waging War on the Poor Majority, co-authored with Anthony Fenton. Eve's latest, co-authored with Owen Schock, is Canada's Long Fight Against Democracy. Man, I got to say that for all that noise and mayhem, you're not in Haiti right now. I should tell our listeners, but in a chain restaurant, the name of which I won't advertise here, because you're on your way to more demos going on, and we can get to that perhaps a little later. But before we do, there's an intriguing article in the Washington Post. It's a couple of weeks old now, by Widlore Merencourt and Amanda Coletta. It is called "Rebel Leader Who Ousted Aristide Set Sights on Haiti's Current Leader." This is about Guy Philippe. Who's Guy Philippe, and what role did he play? Or maybe I should read to you what these authors say about him, and then you can comment, because they typify Guy Philippe as a, quote, charismatic rebel leader who in 2004 led the uprising that chased then-President Jean-Bertrand Aristide from the country for good. What do you think about that characterization of Guy Philippe, and who is he?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that Guy Philippe is charismatic. I think it's also correct to say that Guy Philippe is a killer at the service of the U.S. empire. And Guy Philippe was trained by the U.S. In Ecuador. He was cultivated almost certainly by the CIA. He spent a number of years in jail in the U.S. for drug running. Just recently was released. The Americans released him early, sent him back to Haiti. He was the face. He was the poster boy. He's a good looking guy. He was the poster boy of the 2004 armed assault against the elected government. And he was involved. It's really important to point out the armed assault was successful. They came in. They were basically former military, a military that Aristide had disbanded, a military that was created by the Americans that had a long history of rights abuses. They were obviously very hostile to the Aristide government. They were in the Dominican Republic. And they were launched assaults against the elected government over multiple years. And they, in early 2004, they were increasingly successful. They never would have captured the capital. And that's why U.S., Canadian, and French troops ultimately intervened, because Port-au-Prince is much bigger than any other city in the country. And the government forces were not going to be defeated by Guy Philippe's gang. But basically, Guy Philippe's a thug for hire for the Haitian elite and the foreign powers, and he's this terrible figure. He was glorified. If you go look back in the Montreal Gazette, reporting on the 2004 coup. He was glorified as a sort of like popular figure that was, you know, kind of implied that he was going to be bringing democracy. Now, he Philippe was the, when I say he was the face, the other person who was the main player in the rebels was Jodel Chamblain. Jodel Chamblain was a part of the FRAP, the death squad, during the early 1990s coup that killed thousands. And he was the death squad leader. And so he had more baggage. Guy Philippe didn't have as much sort of baggage in terms of being known as a murderous thug for hire. But that's who he is. Ariel Henry, the current leader that was appointed by the U.S. and Canada nearly 3 years ago, you know, Ariel Henry was on the Council of the Wise People that the U.S., Canada, France created after overthrowing Aristide and thousands of other elected officials in 2004, and he was appointed this body that then appointed the interim prime minister that we backed. So you see that these figures that were all, you know, right at the center of this 2004 overthrow of democracy, they are, you know, returned in Haiti. That's who we are backing today. And it reflects the downward spiral that has transpired since you know, Canada decided that it was going to overthrow the government. And I should also point out, when you talk about the 2004 coup, like this was a military intervention, but this was like every facet, right? We destabilized the Aristide government. We discredited elections going back to 2000 that were the best elections in Haitian history. We, on a total technicality, we use these as a way to justify cutting off money that was already agreed to the Haitian government from the World Bank, the Inter-American Development Bank, to destabilize Aristide. We funded the opposition groups. We put all kinds of money into these Haitian NGOs that demonized the elected government. We supported the opposition political parties. Concurrent with that, these people, these armed forces led by Guy Philippe, were constantly, throughout the whole time of Aristide's government, were constantly leading attacks mostly in the border region. At one point, actually in December 17th of 2001, they actually captured the National Palace. So they were doing sort of like coup attempts the whole time. And this whole time, the Canadian government was playing this diplomatic role, playing this financing role, and then ultimately we would send our troops to destroy democracy in the country, and Haiti hasn't recovered, and Guy Philippe's return to the country, and Guy Philippe, you know, having some platform within Haiti today, is a reflection of the fact that the most kind of like reactionary forces have been empowered in Haiti over the past two decades.
Well, yeah, and Ariel Henry, that he succeeded to the presidency after the assassination of his predecessor Jovenel Moïse, and now he has disarmed as much as perhaps Aristide tried to disarm the army before they turned on him. He has disarmed the BSAP, or the BSAP, barred them from carrying guns. There was a shootout between this agency and the Haitian police just a couple of weeks ago, leaving many people dead. Who is the BSAP, or how do I pronounce that to begin with?
Yeah, I don't know that much about it. It's this environmental protection body that has basically developed, going from environmental protection, which seems like a good idea, to being basically almost, I don't think it would be go too far to say sort of like akin to the Tonton Macoute. The Tonton Macoute were the private militia of the initially the François Duvalier dictatorship. And so it's this armed environmental protection. So they're not principally in Port-au-Prince, they're principally elsewhere in the country. And they were basically aligned with Guy Philippe. So Guy Philippe seemed to be, his return sort of bolstered their standing or their bid to give a go at ousting Ariel Henry. The thing that is important to keep in mind here is that Henry has almost no popular legitimacy, right? So sort of any force that seems like it might oust Henri, it sort of ipso facto would have at least a passive acceptance from the population, and I think that's in many ways it's really a dangerous situation because obviously Guy Philippe, I think Ariel Henri is a corrupt lackey of the wealthy and the foreign powers, but I think Guy Philippe would be a step in a worse direction. But because Henri has so little legitimacy, constitutional or popular, and he's just viewed as the only reason he's there is because he has Washington and Canada's endorsement, that a group like that. A figure like Guy Philippe would be able to sort of develop a certain degree of popular support for a change of order. So that's I think a quite a dangerous dynamic. But basically, it speaks to the descent of Haitian politics. And the big picture way for Canadians to understand this is I don't think the Canadian government is particularly happy with the current climate in Haiti. I don't think it's particularly good for the Canadian sweatshop owners. Like the insecurity has become so out of hand that this isn't good for capitalists, right? The Canadian capitalists operating the country. But they don't necessarily, they want a greater degree of stability. But the big picture way to understand this is that what they worry about more is a pro-poor, pro-independence political movement. And so while they might not like Guy Philippe running things, they might not like the degree of insecurity we're currently seeing, that's preferable to the Famille Lavalas political movement or party that was centered around the poor, that was centered around Haitian sovereignty, and so they basically destroy the alternative, which in Haiti, where you got the vast majority of the population is deeply impoverished. The options are a social democratic, socialist-y kind of direction, or just gangsters running things, and we prefer a gangster situation where the population is cowed by fear, rather than allowing Haitians to sort of get themselves out of the miserable conditions that the country is under.
Well, and it's not just T-shirts and Gildan, I think, sportswear, whatever they're called. I mean, Haiti does have natural resources, and Canada, there's a lot of Canadian-flagged mining operations operating in the country as well, right?
Yeah, there's just a couple of reports of a Canadian company that's trying to move forward. The success, but this gets to some of the instability, the degree of dysfunction has hindered even some of the ability to extract the resources that Canadian companies want, because the infrastructure is so poor, and so the Canadian companies that have, at one point they had control over like 10% of all of Haitian territory, they had prospecting rights for over 10% of Haitian territory, they haven't been able to move forward with these projects, in part because this sort of mix of political and infrastructure situation is so dire. But there's been constant interest from Canadian capital in extracting Haitian resources.
As ever. Well, Yves, we're fast out of time. Canada's long fight against democracy. You're doing a book tour. You're coming out west with it too, right?
At some point, maybe in early June, hopefully be out west.
Okay, well, people can look for that on the shelves. So Eve Engler and Owen Schalk's Canada's Long Fight Against Democracy. You're off to a demo right now, which is why I kind of caught you in between things. What's the demo for?
It's about it's for, you know, Palestinian rights, but it's about a teacher at a school here who has expressed anti-Palestinian positions, and a number of the parents of the kids at the school are